This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From KMOX Sports.
Come on, let's get going now.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Wynn swings and he drives that to left field. Back to the track and go!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
Now, Matt Pauly and the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
On a dreary Wednesday evening, we welcome you in. It is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX, and my name is Matt Pauly. Have you for 2 hours tonight. Really, in some ways, I have you for 3 hours tonight because I've got you 6 to 8 here for a Graybar Sports Open Line, and then we'll roll right into the Gas House Gang, which tonight is myself and Kevin Wheeler. We'll do that from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock. Busy show. Very, very busy show tonight here on KMOX from a guest standpoint. Bernie Miklas is going to join us in about 10 minutes. We'll head to New Orleans for the Super Bowl. Joe Roderick will join us at 6:35. Next hour, we'll talk City SC with our good friend Jen Cease. And we'll talk a little Lindenwood basketball with their head coach, Kyle Gerdeman. He's going to join us at about 7:35. As always, we do have time for you. Your phone calls, your text messages, your tweets, and your voice messages are all welcome here into Sports Open Line. If you call or text, the phone number, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. With us having guests in our next couple segments, we'll really open up those phone lines coming up later on, but we will have them open. As always, you can text in 314-436-7900. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air, and you can also, like I said, leave a voice message. If you are listening on the Odyssey app, or even if you're not listening on the Odyssey app, but you have the Odyssey app, you can just go to the KMOX feed and click down on the microphone, leave a voice message, and that voice message rolls right into the KMOX studio. So we've got that for you as well if you want to get connected with the program. We are 1 week away from pitchers and catchers reporting. Happy 1 week marker from that. Next Wednesday, Jupiter, Florida, we're going to be there, and it's going to be a pitchers and catchers report day. First scheduled workout is scheduled for a week from tomorrow, next Thursday, and we're ready to be there. I'll get down to Florida on Monday and really start doing things there on Tuesday. So we are ready to bring you coverage of Cardinals spring training. And the question that has remained since really the winter meetings and now continues to remain is whether or not Nolan Arenado is going to be on this club. Like, we've had this conversation ad nauseum over and over and over and over about an Arenado. But now what's happening, again, we're a week from pitchers and catchers. Now what's happening is there is a little bit more smoke that's out there. Whether or not there's fire to go along with it, that's anybody's guess. But there's a little bit more smoke. It started yesterday when J.P. Morosi sent out a tweet about the Cardinals and the Red Sox kind of re-engaging on conversations about Arenado. It has continued today. There's been Derek Gould made reference to that. Buster Olney sent something out as well. So a lot of baseball insiders, a lot of very connected people are saying that there is some activity right now between the Cardinals and the Red Sox. I'll say this, and again, a lot of this seems to be connected to Alex Bregman and the teams that we keep hearing now that are still in the teams that seem to be the most likely landers of Alex Bregman. appear to be the Houston Astros, who continue to have an offer on the table. But now I'm hearing a lot about the Chicago Cubs now, and I don't want to see that happen. Last thing I want is for the best available remaining free agent, with all due respect to Pete Alonso, and best remaining free agent position player. That'd be the better way to say it. Last thing I want is for him to end up with the Chicago Cubs. So I hope Bregman and the Cubs, that doesn't end up happening. But we're not hearing as much when it comes to the Red Sox being connected in on Bregman. Now, the Red Sox have the financial means to make that happen. If they really want Alex Bregman, they could probably offer in the same neighborhood of what the Astros are offering, what the Cubs are offering. So maybe they're just kind of stepping back from that situation. Maybe they feel like they're not, that they don't have much of a chance at this point with what they're willing to do for Bregman. So that's why the conversations about Arenado with the Cardinals have kind of picked up a little bit, because they feel like internally they are out of the Bregman sweepstakes. That's probably what's going on. I would say 70% chance that's what's happening. That the Red Sox are reading what everybody else is reading, that Bregman is unlikely to head to Boston. So if they really want to upgrade themselves at third base, which is something that has been talked about for quite some time, and in that situation, Rafael Devers would probably move over to first base. If they are going to go down that path, if they want to improve themselves defensively at third base, the best remaining option, if they're not going to get Alex Bregman, is Nolan Arenado. So those conversations are starting to pick up a little bit. I would just throw this out there, though. And again, the scenario that I just laid out, I think is like a 70% chance scenario. That other 30% chance, they could also be using this as leverage against Scott Boras in these talks for Bregman, where if they feel like that they've got an offer on the table for Bregman that is better than the other teams that are out there, then they could be saying, look, we're tired of waiting. We're going to move on to our plan B, which is Nolan Arenado, and we are going to start engaging, and we're going to start trying to work out a deal with the Cardinals to get Arenado, and we're going to move on from Bregman. And again, it's possible that that's happening. I don't think it's likely, because again, we are continuing to only hear about the Cubs and the Astros in the Bregman sweepstakes. But if there's a chance that that's happening, there's a chance that the Red Sox feel like that they have given an offer to Bregman that is should be more respected than it has been respected, and they're trying to create a little bit of leverage. We'll see. I just want this thing to be over with. In some ways, I am rooting for Bregman not to go to Boston. So if the Boston thing is going to happen, that seems like the most likely thing, because I just don't want this Arenado thing, you know, hanging over the head of the Cardinals here moving forward. We are going to take a break. We'll get Bernie Miklas' thoughts on it coming up in just a moment. He joins us for our weekly conversation. That's up in just a moment or so. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Time for our weekly conversation with Bernie Miklas, which is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling. Bernie, always good to talk to you. Happy Wednesday. How are you?
Doing good, man, and also looking forward to being with you on the Gas House Gang at noon tomorrow.
You'll get me on Friday. Tomorrow, I think
with
Wheeler.
Oh, Friday, that's right. It's me and Wheeler. What am I doing? I'm trying to rush to Friday. That's why.
There you go.
Anyway, sorry, man. Go ahead.
No, always one of my favorite parts of the week is being able to work with you on that for sure. We've been talking nothing but Nolan Arenado seemingly for months, but if you believe the stuff on social media, all of a sudden there's a little bit more smoke that's starting to puff out connecting him to the Boston Red Sox. They've always been the team that we've been talking about recently. How much do you feel that some of this stuff that's out there is legitimate, that maybe things are starting to percolate a little bit regarding a potential deal with the Red Sox?
Well, I think there's a little more to it now because I think maybe the Red Sox are tired of waiting around on, Alex Bregman. And their team president, Sam Kennedy, president CEO, he said in recent days that oh, yeah, we're still looking for a right-handed bat. You know, and he talked about how they're getting a couple of infielders back, that, including Trevor Story, who were hurt last year. But he said, yeah, we've said this all along, and we're still looking for a right-handed bat. So there's an acknowledgement that they're in the market for a right-handed bat. And then Lou Merlone, who's one of the Red Sox broadcasters, he's an analyst, you know, he was talking about this, and he said, look, obviously they're looking for Bregman, but as time goes on, if they're going to pivot, they'll probably pivot to Arenado. It makes sense. So it's just a waiting game right now. But, you know, I do think that this latest round of speculation has got a little more substance than some of the stuff we've seen before. So we'll have to wait and see, right?
Yeah, and again, if the Red Sox don't feel like they're in the running for Bregman, then you move on to Arenado. If the Red Sox do feel like they're still in the running for Bregman, then maybe you force the issue with Scott Boras a little bit by engaging on Arenado.
Yeah, that you never know. I don't. It's tough to call his bluff, but you can try it. I just wish this. Come on now. Let's get this thing done. I don't know whether they're still holding out hope that Houston will come in and maybe make some concessions and get a deal done. So, but it's been annoying. There is a lot to talk about. So it's not like it's not a big story. It is, but I think we're all in the mood for it to move on a little bit. Let's get this track down the trains.
We've discussed before
the other way around, this train down the track. Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. We've discussed before that when it comes to Boras clients, we should probably listen to the words that come out of John Heyman's mouth. And Heyman put out there not that long ago that he feels like the team that has the best shot of signing Bregman right now is the Chicago Cubs. And I know that's the last thing the Cardinals fans want to hear.
And that could be one of, Boras is really good about raising the specter of like, oh, all of a sudden there's another team in it. And so I think actually there's something to this. I think the Cubs are making a pitch. I just don't know how far and how high they're willing to go. I don't know that they want to, go with a 5 or 6 year deal, something like that. I think they'd probably be willing to pay a really big annual average value for maybe 2 or 3 years, something like that. But I do think that they're in it. There's definitely been some smoke with that, even with some of the reporting done in Chicago. It's a lot of it is, a lot of it is not based on like facts, but it is the gossip pipeline. And when agents start to talk and Scott Boras puts stuff out with his favorite writers, you got to pay some attention to it.
This probably goes under the category of old man yelling at the sky, but Bernie, this offseason has stunk because the entire time we've just waited on the Arenado thing. We've waited on the Bregman thing. The hot stove is supposed to be fun. And by the time you get to February 5th, like we're at right now, we're 1 week from pitchers and catchers. The focus needs to be on the team and what it's going to look like. And maybe there's a little piece here or a little piece there that's going to be added. But the whole offseason has been hijacked. And as somebody who loves the sport of baseball, I have become more and more offended by the way this thing has gone down.
It's disgusting. It's boring. It's tedious. The Hot Stove League used to be a great marketing vehicle to keep people interested in baseball, like really, really keenly interested in, who's going to make a trade? Who's signing where? Because something could happen at any time. But you have a couple of three super agents who control all of this, and they have the right to do it. They're not violating any rules. But I keep going back to this. The Major League Baseball Players Association only seems to be interested in the top tier free agents getting theirs, while the players who are lower on the food chain, so to speak, have to sit and wait and sit and wait and wonder and worry about, when is Boras's guys going to sign? Like when will I be able to get an offer? So I'm always confused by that because I've been a member of unions and, I'm a pro-union guy, but I'm always interested in this caste system with the Major League Baseball Players Association because any talk of like, well, let's put a limit, let's put a deadline on when guys have to sign. They're all, no. Well, who benefits by letting this thing go into spring training? Scott Boras, his elite clients. It's not just him, it's other ones. And it holds everyone else up. And if I'm a player looking for a mid-range deal and I have to wait and wait and wait, or if I'm, you know, even lower on the scale where you're going to have to pick up the crumbs and you're going to have to like rush into somebody's spring training camp, I might actually talk to the union and say, well, you know, do we even matter in this? Like, are you representing our interest or just the select few most prominent free agents who are going to make the most money? I think it's just a really bizarre way to go about it. You don't see this in any other sport. You really don't.
No, you don't. Like, look at the NFL is as good as any league in making sure that they're in the news and the spotlight is on them. Even in the offseason, they space out all their offseason events and everything. They don't want them too close to each other. And then you have baseball that's doing this with free agency. I thought it was the dumbest thing in the world a few years back when they got rid of the waiver trade deadline, because that was August 31st. What's happening, Bernie, on August 31st? First, everybody's getting excited about football, and that was a day where it was an opportunity to once again put the spotlight on baseball, and they just got rid of that thing. Like, I just do. This game is amazing. Let people know about it.
Yeah, they, you know, and this is a lot of this is on Rob Manfred too. They willingly concede their off season to every other sport. Because the NBA is making deals all off season, you know, NBA the trade deadline that's going on now is a feeding frenzy. It's all you see on Twitter and ESPN. The NFL we've talked about, they have two or three different periods during the year in the off season where there's all kinds of stuff happening, and the NFL does not concede any dates on the calendar. They've always got something to promote and keep the fans interested. The NBA is much like that. Hockey does a great job. When July 1st rolls around, the free agent season, there's always just all kinds of activity. And it happens in waves. It's not just like a three-day thing. But baseball concedes its off-season. They've reduced their off-season to nothing, basically.
Yeah.
Except for the few guys that get big deals early, like Corbin Burns would be an example.
A couple of things for you before we get out of here.
Sure, man.
SLU basketball last night, being down, what was it, 5 with, I think, 35 seconds to go, and they come back and they get a road win, which is always tough, at UMass. I mean, we realize that this is a team that's still flawed. They're not great, but, I mean, they're providing some really good moments, and it's been fun to watch them in league play.
Yeah, the games are fun. I was very disappointed in the Dayton loss, but the games are fun. And they're showing that they can overcome some things. Like, Avila's not only been playing poorly by his standards, and he's the first to tell you that, but he's getting into foul trouble, and he was a non-factor last night. And then you look at SLU in that game, you know, they're down. They turned the ball over 15 times. They gave up 25 offensive rebounds. And basically, and I think Josh Schertz essentially said this, they probably had no business winning that game. But they made key stops late, and they kept their poise, and they just kept grinding through, and they got that thing done. So I thought that was a really impressive win. And I'll be curious to see what Mizzou can do at Tennessee tonight, because Tennessee, all the things that Mizzou does well, they're an effective field goal shooting percentage team. They're a great three-point shooting team. Tennessee's got the number one defense in America, including stopping the three-point shot. So this will be a great, great look at Mizzou, what they can do on Tennessee's home court.
Tight game right now, 5.5 minutes to go first half. Missouri leads 23-21. So if you're looking for a tight game, you got it. So yeah, there you go. Last thing, just continued disappointment in the Blues. You cannot have a lead at home late in the third period and not win when you got to fight and scratch and claw for every point. And that's what happened last night. And then they lose in overtime.
They're a better team than they were under Drew Bannister. I mean, I think since you know, Montgomery took over, they're 15th in points percentage. They're a middle of the pack team. And I think maybe that's all they are, is a middle of the pack team. I admit it. I never hesitate to admit I was wrong. I thought they were on their way. Not that I said they're going to, book it, they'll be in the playoffs. But I thought, well, this is a different team. Things have changed dramatically. They've got a lot of the answers now. And then all of a sudden it goes off the rails and you don't know what to expect from one night to the next. And we, you know, Matt, you and I have talked about it, and Wheels and Tom Ackerman, we've all talked about it. You know, at some point, it's very obvious it's not coaching, but it's very obvious that the roster's not good enough. And what Doug Armstrong's going to have to do to amend that or do something to fix it or update it? I have no idea, but you really can't count on this roster to be consistent.
Before we get you out of here, Bernie, can you tell us a little bit about our friends over at Saliga Heating and Cooling?
I would be delighted, my friend. Saliga Heating and Cooling has been taking care of the Miklas family for about 16 years. We love them. We trust them. We believe them. When they come to our home to work on something, man, total class, total integrity, the professionalism, the knowledge. You know, there have been times I've mentioned this before when we have a little problem, they come in and we're expecting, we're probably going to have to, you know, buy this something. We're going to have to replace this. That might cost some money. But this honest, independent American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning dealer, they'll always look for cheaper solutions. Like, they're not going to leave you hanging. They're not going to try to talk you or nudge you into something you don't need at that time. They told us about 2 years ago, oh, no, you don't need a new boiler. Yours is old, but you got another 3 years left with it. We'll let you know when we think you need to replace it. They could have talked us into buying a boiler at that time, but they didn't want to do it. They'd rather have our business and treat their clients with the utmost respect. And that starts with integrity and honesty. So we're huge fans here in the Miklas home. They do all residential work, commercial work, all makes and models at Saliga Heating and Cooling. And, of course, they have that outstanding American Standard Heating Air Conditioning dealer. Hey, go to SaligaHeatingandCooling.com. Find out about the Priority Club. It's a maintenance plan. And there's a lot of benefits, including economical benefits. Also, just your peace of mind, knowing all of your equipment's working well. And preventative maintenance can save you a lot of money. So one more thing, financing options are available if you do some business with Saliga Heating and Cooling, subject to credit approval. But you get the phone number and all the information on their services at SaligaHeatingandCooling.com. Thank you very much.
Super Bowl week does continue, and that means our guy Joe Roderick is continuing to make his way around New Orleans, going to all the events, finding out everything that is going on in front of the Chiefs and the Eagles matching up against each other coming up on Sunday evening at the Superdome. And with that, we do welcome our guy Joe Roderick back on to the show. He's going to be with us on Friday as well. Joe, thanks for taking some time. How is New Orleans treating you?
New Orleans is doing great. Last night was the media party at Mardi Gras World, and it far exceeded the media parties from Las Vegas last year and Arizona the year before. A lot of good food. I definitely had my fill of Cajun cuisine last night. Had a crawfish hot dog. Hmm. And a crab meat grilled cheese. Those were by far the two best things that I had that I ate last night.
Okay, a crawfish hot dog. Is that like a hot dog and there's like little crawfish meat like inserted inside of it, or is it something other than that?
It was a mini hot dog that was covered in like a crawfish type sauce.
Hmm. I don't think I've ever eaten anything crawfish.
It was very good.
Okay. When I was little... Yeah. There was a creek right down from my house and I would catch crawfish, but that is as close as I've ever gotten.
Yeah, I had a few different crawfish dishes. It's pretty good. I hopefully will run into some again on this trip.
We talked to you on Monday just before the NFL opening night event, media day. I know you were there. What were your takeaways from that, which is always a bit of a spectacle?
You know who the star was of the? I'm sure you've seen all over Twitter who the star of the event was. It was Jameis Winston. Whoever it was, somebody at Fox Sports decided we need to hire Jameis Winston to be our guy, our interview guy at media night. Whoever it was, they deserve a raise. They deserve a promotion because they hit it out of the ballpark. Jameis Winston was a star interviewing players throughout for both teams. It was great. at one point, he asked Saquon Barkley who he should play for next year, and Saquon Barkley said, "I heard the Giants need a quarterback."
Well, we know that Jameis likes crab legs, so maybe he likes crawfish as well.
I would imagine he does, yeah. And he also was throwing out, they had cookies made of W's, so he was throwing everybody W's to eat, if you've ever seen the thing he does with his fingers. and he threw one to Travis Kelce, and Travis Kelce caught it. And James makes the comment, I'm used to having those intercepted.
Hey, at least he's self-deprecating on it. He knows who he is.
Right.
Yeah. After they get through that, that's when teams can really start to get back to practice and everything. And it gets a little bit more serious here moving forward. It also seems, Joe, a lot of teams try to do most of their heavy lifting work last week, where whatever they get done this week almost can be a bonus because there are so many distractions that go along with it, even after you get past media night.
Oh, especially, I mean, you think too, I mean, the players got in Sunday. They got in Sunday afternoon. You imagine, you know, as the week goes on, families start to come in, and you start to, you know, maybe you get to see your wife or girlfriend, maybe you get to see your kids for the first time. And yes, like you really are like there. It's, you know, everybody knows what hotels they're in, and I'm sure there's people in the lobbies and trying to get a glimpse or get an autograph, but you really, I mean, for most part, these guys are probably just like locked in their rooms or on their floors. And then they get shuttled off to practice and they're back. Like, it's just, it cannot be fun before you play in the biggest game of your life. And you talk to some of these guys about it, or you hear these stories of like the veterans that'll go to the rookies and they're like, listen here, like you need to find somebody in your family, like somebody you trust that's going to handle all the ticket requests and everything else. Don't let people, you know, fourth cousins start texting you on Friday night asking if they can get you tickets to the Super Bowl, like stuff like that. They're just like, shut it all down, just focus on the game. And, you know, for the Chiefs and Eagles, a lot of these guys have been here before, but there are a few, you know, I mean, Saquon Barkley, Xavier Worthy, like you think those guys, like this is like their first taste of what this is. So you have to lean on some of those veterans for the advice.
Yeah, it's, I don't think people think about that all the time because it is just so crazy, and it gets crazier by the day. Joe, I got to think that because people who are coming to the game, they arrive on Sunday, they arrive on Monday, they arrive on Tuesday, like all week long. So it almost has to feel like every day more people are being infused into the market, more things are happening, and the craziness level just continues to go up.
Yeah, like Monday night, went and just walked briefly by Bourbon Street, and it was dead. Like already last night, you could see it was like the amount of people down there doubled. I'm going to guess that come like Friday night, like you won't be able, it'll be just as packed as like a Mardi Gras would be with how many people are going to be down there for something like that. And yeah, the streets get worse. The just getting around everywhere gets a lot worse. So you really do have to have a plan. Even if you're coming down here just to watch the game and be a spectator, like you need to plan it all out in a town like this to know where you need to go or where you need to be and just how to get around the best way.
I remember going to the Super Bowl as a fan when the Rams played in the one in New Orleans. We couldn't get a hotel in New Orleans. We ended up staying in Baton Rouge just because these events, I mean, you've got people staying all throughout the region and basically every room is accounted for.
Oh yeah, that's they have had these sold out for months. I think people knew well ahead of time. You know, they planned accordingly. I think you get fan base now. Like the Chiefs are like what the Patriots were a decade ago, to where I think in a lot of cases you get fans that will book this back in like August or September and just assume that their team's going to make it if you're like the Chiefs. And I you know, they're just saving their money up for another trip to go to another Super Bowl, because I think, you know, you look at a team like the Patriots now, that's they're struggling, you know, number one overall pick, like stuff like that, where you know it doesn't last forever, so you might as well enjoy it while it's there.
So take me through, we'll have you on again coming up on Friday evening on the show. So take me through the next 48 hours. What's going to be going on in New Orleans? What's the plan here as we're 4 or 5 days out from the Super Bowl?
Well, Matt, I do have something for you, hopefully tomorrow night. So tomorrow morning, I'm supposed to be talking to Chris Myers of Fox Sports.
Okay.
He does baseball stuff for them. And talked to him briefly today, and you know, as soon as he heard St. Louis, like I think he's real excited to talk some baseball tomorrow, because right now it's just been all football stuff. And Chris Myers is a jack of all trades, whether it's baseball, football, NASCAR, or even dog shows. He's a guy that can do it all. So I am very much looking forward to talking to him tomorrow about Cardinals. I'm going to try to also track down Chris Mad Dog Russo, and talk a little Cardinals with him too. So those are hopefully some things I have for you later on this week. So that's as far as content-wise goes for that. My plan tonight, I am trying to find my way into the Kelce party tonight, Matt.
Oh, is that just the Kelce family? I assume Travis will not be able there, but Jason would probably make an appearance?
If Travis is there, I think it's for them to do their podcast, and then I think Travis will probably have to go back. I'm going to also assume Taylor Swift won't be there. But I think it's the whole, their brand, whatever their media company is. I think they are just kind of having an event tonight. So I am trying to figure out how I need to, what I need to do to get into there. So that's the plan tonight. And then tomorrow I'll see Chris Stapleton in concert.
All right. Well, we'll follow up on Friday to see whether or not you got into the Kelce party.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, hopefully, fingers crossed on that one.
All right, Joe, great stuff. Enjoy the rest of the time in New Orleans, and we'll catch up with you again coming up on Friday.
Sounds good, Matt. Thanks. Have a good night.
You bet. That's our guy, Joe Roderick, covering the Super Bowl in New Orleans. We've got more coming up in just a moment. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
Starting to wrap up hour number one. We got a lot coming up in hour two. We'll talk some City SC soccer with Jen Cease. We'll talk some Lindenwood men's basketball with their head coach, Kyle Gerdeman. That's all in the 7 o'clock hour. We've spent a fair amount of time talking through these Nolan Arenado rumors that are back out there that there's a re-engagement. Maybe that's probably the best way to say it, between the Cardinals and the Red Sox on a potential deal. Got a text message from 314, and I do feel like a lot of this has been addressed, so I don't want to spend too much time on it, but it's also something that I'm kind of passionate about and really want people to at least understand where I'm coming from, so I'll address it here. So the text message reads, "The Cardinals are better off with Nolan, not trading Nolan. Why are you in favor of this cost-cutting youth movement by the Cardinals? I'd rather the Cardinals keep Nolan and the DeWitts sell the team." All right, so let's go through these things very quickly. You know what? I'll agree with you. Cardinals might be better. The win-loss record might actually be better this year with Nolan Arenado than without Nolan Arenado. Okay, let's. It might be, it might not be. Not worth an argument. You might be right on that one. That is inconsequential to this conversation. The Cardinals are going through a reset to try to position themselves in the future to once again be able to win at a very high level. They are playing in the middle right now, and bluntly and honestly, the way that things have gone, their ceiling has become getting into the playoffs, but not really going on much of a playoff run. It's nice to get to the playoffs. It's an accomplishment to get to the playoffs. I'm not poo-pooing being a playoff team, but that can't be the St. Louis Cardinals ceiling. And right now, barring a very unexpected turn of events, which can happen in the playoffs, but generally speaking, that's their ceiling, just being a playoff team. I want this to be a team that has a ceiling of being a legit World Series contender. And going down the path that they've been going on, they're not going to get to that point once again. You do that by drafting and developing impact players. That's why they're going through this player reset. They've got some guys at the major league level that they got to figure out what they have. You cannot go into 2026 without knowing who you have in Nolan Gorman. And you figure that out by giving him an everyday job and just seeing what happens. You got to figure out what you have in Jordan Walker. You do that by giving him an everyday job without the threat of him going back to Memphis. You have to know what you have in those guys, guys who have previously been top-level prospects. And I would include Thomas Tajasi in that conversation as well, although not as extreme as I would with Gorman and Walker. And if Arenado's on the team, Tajasi's likely in Memphis, which I don't think is great. That's why I want to see Arenado moved, because I want to see this team be able to get back on the path to having impact players that they produce. And you do that in part by figuring out if the guys you have are there. Look, it's the trendy, fun thing right now for disgruntled Cardinals fans to say DeWitt should sell the team. Yeah, let's just go with that. It is so incredibly short-sighted. It is so incredibly without looking at the track record of the DeWitts. Have the Cardinals lost their way? Yes. Are the DeWitts partially responsible for the Cardinals losing their way? Yeah, they are. I'm not, and I think they would admit that as well. They've admitted that by putting this team onto the reset that's going on right now. But if you take a step back and the overall track record of the St. Louis Cardinals since the DeWitt's ownership took over, you go a little bit more, you take that, you know, the 10 or so year period from 2006 to 2016, the DeWitts have had a very good track record of Cardinals baseball. And there's been a lot of winning, and most teams in baseball would trade what the Cardinals have done. Yeah, they need to reset some things. They've lost their way. There is culpability that goes along with the DeWitts, but they absolutely should not sell the team. That is a ridiculous thought, and I think people who really take a step back and look at things can realize that. Now it's on them to get back to when they were so good before, when Jeff Luhnow was running things in terms of, you know, player development and draft. Like, that's what they were doing. They're trying to get back to that, and I think they're going to with Heim Bloom in charge. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
Getting into hour number two of the program, busy hour coming up. Jen Cease is going to join us in about 10 minutes or so. And then later on the hour, Lindenwood basketball coach Kyle Gerdeman is going to join us. We just heard Maria Kina take care of the 7 o'clock news inside of her newscast. Non-sports completely, but I wanted to mention this real quick because it's near and dear to my heart. The news that Mom's Deli is moving out of its location. We don't know if or when it's going to move into a new location. They've indicated that probably will happen. But, man, what a bummer.
It's a total bummer. Oh. And, I mean, you could say it's kind of sports related because think of, like, Super Bowl, all the people that go in there and buy sandwiches for, and parties. And it's just been in such a neighborhood staple for so many years. And it's really cool because for people who haven't been there, it's a small little market, too, and family-owned, and it's just terrible to see this happen.
All right, so admittedly, what I'm about to say, I say it without knowing any of the details or any of the pretense, so maybe there's something going on that I don't know, so I leave myself open for that. But shame on the people who own that are ending the lease, or maybe they raised the rent so much that it became like it's a lease issue, and that stinks.
They
don't want to go anywhere. They want to stay.
I don't understand that. I mean, it's been 47 years, and now all of a sudden, it's like, oh, bye-bye. That's it. We're not renewing.
Oh, just the worst.
I can say something comparable, just a couple of half a block away, is LeGrand's Market. Good sandwiches, nice little grocery store. Been there for umpteen years, family-owned. So in the meantime, until Mom's comes back.
Okay. Yeah. Just hopefully it comes up. There's something about walking into the market atmosphere and the smell in there. And you all, like, I don't know anything about the family or anything, but you see the people working behind the counter and you just know that some of those people are in the family and everything. Like, it's just such a special place.
Absolutely. You mentioned the smell, which is another really cool thing. Because when you go into big places and chain places, you don't get that.
No.
You don't get it.
So, a bummer. All right. Thanks, Maria.
All right.
That's Maria Kina joining us. Just wanted to share that. Hopefully, if anybody from Mom's Deli is listening, we are encouraging you strongly to open up at a new location because we will miss you dearly. Just responding to what we were talking about last hour with the Nolan Arenado thing where I said, I think there's a disconnect here. There is an absolute disconnect on why Nolan Arenado should be moved. Because I went on and on and on about creating opportunities for young players and figuring out what you have for 2026 and beyond. And that's got to be the goal for 2025 because they're going through a reset. And I think they're going to be better than what a lot of people think they're going to be. I think this is going to be a team that if things go right can contend for a playoff spot. I am much more bullish on the Cardinals being good this year than a lot of people are. Maybe I'll be right. Maybe I'll be wrong. I think the distance between the team's ceiling and their floor this year, it's probably the biggest distance of any team in baseball. This could be a team that could go out and win 87, 88, 89 type games, or this could be a team that's down in the low 70s, right? Like that. Either one of those scenarios could play out depending on what happens. So yes, Nolan Arenado being a St. Louis Cardinal this year probably makes them a better team for this year. But that's not the point. That doesn't get you closer to being a team that has legitimate World Series aspirations and being a team that can consistently go on deep playoff runs, as we have seen this organization be that team for the vast majority of the last 10, 15, 20, 20 years, right? That's who they've been, and that's what they need to get back to. And you get back to that by making sure that your own cost-controlled guys are developing to what they're going to be. Got a text message when I was talking about Jordan Walker in the last hour. So Walker is too hyped. You don't know that. Third-party publications. This is not the Cardinals lifting up their own prospects. Third-party publications that have no vested interest in St. Louis Cardinals baseball listed Jordan Walker as one of the best prospects in all of baseball. Listed Nolan Gorman as one of the best prospects in all of baseball. The Cardinals have not developed them correctly where they can reach their potential when they get to the major league level. Now, do those third-party publications get it wrong sometimes? Yeah, of course they do. Is there a possibility that Nolan Gorman is a 198 hitter who strikes out twice a game, and yeah, he's going to hit home runs when he makes contact, but he doesn't make contact enough, and that's just who he is? Yeah, there's that possibility, but it probably not. Probably not, because generally, prospects that are viewed as highly as Gorman was viewed, they will get to that, or they'll get to some level of that at some point in time. Not always, but generally there's something there. So it's up to the Cardinals now to help him get to his potential. Is there a chance that for the rest of Jordan Walker's career, all you got to do is throw a low and away pitch and he's just going to swing at that thing and miss, and he's going to pound everything into the ground, and that's just who he is? Yeah, that's a possibility. Is it a legit possibility? No. This is a guy who had superstar written all over him, and then since he's been in the big leagues, it hasn't really happened for him. A couple years ago, had a really good second half of the season, but it hasn't been there. So you have to figure out if you can get those guys to where they need to be, and that is the number one goal for this season. If they happen to win a bunch of games doing it, great, but figure out what you have. We're going to talk with Jen Cease about City SC. We'll do that next here on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We're going to bring on a very familiar voice, someone who you hear sometimes hosting this very show when I am not here, but you hear her a lot on the broadcast for City SC over on her sister station, Y98, host of the St. Louis City Soccer Report, and now also hosting the City Spotlight podcast. We'll get into that in just a moment. It is Jen Cease. You follow her on Twitter at Jen Cease on air, J-E-N-S-I-E-S-S on air. Hey, Jen, how are you?
Hey, good. How are you, Matt?
I am good. It's good to be talking to you. And we are getting closer and closer to the start of the season for City SC. They're playing an event right now, playing some preseason games. They matched up against Salt Lake earlier today. I think that finished in a 1-1 tie. But what's just from a very general standpoint, I know you were at Media Day covering. You've been out of training a little bit. New head coach. The roster's a little bit tweaked as well. What are your general takeaways so far for this team, and how different they may look going into their 2025 campaign?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I think I'm almost excited as it was to get the team the first time when you really didn't know who these guys were, how Coach Carnell at the time would be approaching this game. Now we've got Coach Olaf Melberg, who's in with, you know, not saying that he's not going to change City's style, but of course every coach has a different tweak, a different way they like to approach. He's a former center back at the highest level you can get, so he looks at the game from a defensive kind of approach as well. Looking back at the couple of games they had in Bradenton, you know, they lost 1-0 to the New England Revolution. They did win 1-0 over the New York Red Bulls. Coach Milberg told us it should have been more, that the attack is something that they're really looking to tweak, but that the defense has been pretty solid. And if we know from all those times last season when City had all those ties, you can probably remember that, and giving up goals in some key moments where we just had some letdown, I think that, you know, being very solid at City's back is going to be the focus of not only what Bradenton, Florida was, but now out at Coachella, and really tweaking things to see what works, what can we try. Conrad Wallum, who just scored today, is basically just in the United States, so really stepping on the pitch for the first time with the team, and he scores. We'll be interested to see where he fits in the whole picture. So a lot of moving parts yet to see what they've got before opening day on February 22nd.
You had a conversation with Klaus that I thought was really interesting, and you talked to him a little bit about him adjusting to a new coach and how much he maybe connects with Melberg. There's kind of a European connection between those two guys, not just for Klaus, but generally speaking, how are the players responding to having a new coach in Olaf Melberg?
You know, overall really well. The same theme seems to prevail no matter which one you're talking to, whether you're talking to an injured Chris Durkin who's coming back, or you're talking to somebody like Klaus who's up top, that some of it right now is kind of figuring out what does he want, what does he mean. But, you know, there's something that more than one player said about Coach Olaf Melberg, and I will quote, they said he brings an aura and a presence that demands respect, that, you know, he demands and calls on things from the players that he calls on for himself as a former player. He has a high level of expectation. So right now it's just really more understanding, like, where do you want me to be? How do you want me to move? And it is a little bit different than what they did before. They've been experimenting a little bit with a 5-back system. We'll see if they bring that into the actual season. He's really focusing on that kind of second line of the attack, which we can also call rest defense. Mm-hmm. Rest defense is those people that it's not in the main attack, but they're the first to jump the ball if possession is lost. So he's very focused on that, plus nonstop players. But they overall, it seems like, even though they haven't quite figured completely out what it is that they need to do to be together as a team, that it all seems to be working well. And the feedback they get from him is very clear, very positive, and he has a clear plan on how he wants to approach this next 2025 season.
If there's been any, I don't even want to use the word controversy, but if there's been, you know, one area of the way they play that there's been a lot of discussion about, it's been about the aggressiveness in the attack and whether or not you're going to have a, you know, one striker or two strikers on the field and things like that. What are you expecting? Is it going to be more attacking, or is it kind of more of the same with Melberg's spin on it?
You know, I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be different, which is, it's like a really, really broad thing. But when I'm talking about like the defense, I think it's one of those, he's going to focus really hard. There are a number of times where, you know, he talks about nonstop players, and what he means by that isn't just that they're physically fit, but they're not losing. We can look back on games with City last year where there were moments they seem to have control of the game, and then due to physical fatigue or loss of mental focus, that they all of a sudden now the game's tied or they're down by one when they were clearly in hand, had the game in hand. So I think he's going to work really hard that defense is very, very solid. When it comes to the attack, talking a little bit with Tomas Ostrak, who made his appearance on the pitch today, it was great to see. He talked a little bit about the fact that Coach Melberg is also, they want to get in behind the defense, right? They want to attack as directly as they can. That's a very Swedish style of play, very direct, very a little bit less Brazilian, a little less pretty, but more direct. But he said, you know, something that stood out to me was he said, you know, he will say, if the attack's not there, don't rush it. In other words, don't try to make an attack out of something that's not there. Don't take what we would call, you know, low percentage chances. So we're not going to work the ball around for the sake of holding on to the ball. But if the attack's not there, we're going to rely on the fact that we have a second line, right? Our midfielders and whoever's going to be laying in low underneath those one or two, however many strikers Olaf decides to work with, and they will make sure we maintain possession so we can try and find another attack. So I think it's still going to be very direct. I think we're going to find it's a little bit less, quote, chaotic the way Bradley Carnell liked it.
We're basically 2 weeks from the start of the season. It's going to be on February 22nd, which is a couple Saturdays from now, or three Saturdays from now. 2 weeks from this Saturday would be the best way to say that. They've got two more exhibitions here at this Coachella Valley Invitational. Then they're going to have a closed-door friendly against San Jose, and then that's going to be it. That's going to lead them for about a week into the regular season opener. What are the things that they really need to lock in on and get better at here in these next 2 weeks, which really isn't that much time?
Well, yeah, honestly, it kind of goes back to your last question, is the players and coach are going to have to figure out how they want to approach. He's still, other than looking at game tape, he doesn't know them. They don't know him. So how does he want to approach? And then who fits in that approach? You know, for example, Celio Pompeu is not up to speed just yet when it comes to fitness and, you know, being ready fully to go into a full 90 at all. But he comes to mind as, how does a player who likes to dribble the defense, he loves the ball at his feet, he loves to hold on to it, how does a player like Celio fit into Coach Olaf's kind of structure? How does, you know, we saw Chris Durkin and Edward Louvin work really well together last year. Are they going to be part of his structure in that same way? So I think it's really a matter of how he wants to approach the way the game is played, and then who fits in those pieces. And one other thing he talked about in the press conference, and he's Lutz has talked about it before too, is, you know, understanding that players need to be able to play multiple positions. We say this to them at the youth level, and if they're listening now, youth, the pros deal with this too. It, you know, you may have been City's right winger last year under John Hackworth or under Coach Bradley Carnell, but you may not be doing that this year. You might have to do something different in order to stay on that pitch. So I think it's just a matter of who's going to fit where in what structure is going to be most successful. And of course, that'll change as we play different opponents and how they prefer to play their styles of game.
The season will begin on February 22nd when City plays host to Colorado Rapids. Energizer Park, that's what we're calling it now. Energizer
right.
Park is the home. Of course, you'll be able to hear all those broadcasts on our sister station, Y98. Jen, a big part of that. And Jen, not only are you a big part of that, but it was announced earlier this week, we have a new KMOX Odyssey Sports podcast. It is the City Spotlight, and this is a really, really cool thing for City fans to be able to have at their fingertips.
Yeah, you know, honestly, from a personal selfish perspective, I really like it too, because in the last 2 years, when you talk to players many times, you get these great nuggets of information, great ways of understanding them. And sometimes the only time you will hear them is on the Y98 pregame or on a KMOX St. Louis City Soccer Report, maybe on Sports Open Line. And there's been really no way for fans to refer back to those conversations. So I'm really excited that KMOX and Odyssey have put together the City Spotlight podcast. At the moment, it's just the interviews we have from this preseason with each player. Six or seven have been uploaded. I still have three more, I think, to edit and put in there. But we hope to have it as a place for latest news, interviews, press conference notes, analysis. Of course, when Dale Shilley or maybe Tom Ackerman do their interviews with Coach Olaf, those would be there as well. But kind of a one-stop shop for St. Louis City fans to go when it comes to what's the latest and greatest happening with their favorite MLS team.
Yeah, I encourage people to get the Odyssey app and search for City Spotlight, or wherever you happen to get your podcast, do a search for City Spotlight. Jen's got it all over her Twitter account, at Jen Seesaw on Air. So you can just click the link right there and find it. And there's lots of great stuff if you want to. Jen, one of the things I appreciate about you is you obviously really, really know soccer, but I always like that when you're talking to folks, there seems to be a personal part of it as well. And I think if people want to get to know these players a little bit more while also understanding what's going on from a soccer X's and O's standpoint, listening to you in these conversations is a great way to go about doing that.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I mean, I know what it's like to play the game, of course, and I know that a lot of people get to know this game through playing gaming online. And what you have to also realize, too, is that, you know, these players aren't avatars that never run out of gas. These are players with personal lives and different approaches. So it's been really interesting to kind of get their individual takes on how it's going so far. One funny story is, like, you know, Marcel Hartl, the two-a-days that I was referring to as two-a-days when they were doing those at the beginning, aren't that foreign to European players, but we're a little bit new to some of the American pros. So just kind of hearing some of those differences from the guys regarding on the pitch, off the pitch, I think is invaluable for understanding them as players. And I hope it's okay to bring this up here too. I kind of got the news that, you know, we're looking to have a preseason show, and that may be coming up. I think it's set, Matt, on Tuesday, February 18th. We'll be looking to cover City ahead of their game on the 22nd. So fingers crossed we have access to people like Diego Gigliani, maybe Coach Olaf Melberg himself, and maybe some other players, and get really hyped up for this first game at home against Colorado Rapids.
Yeah, really looking forward to that. And that's going to be on during the Sports Open Line hours, I believe. So that's going to be a whole lot of fun. Jen, thank you so much for taking the time with us today. We're going to be hearing a whole lot more of you here moving forward with the season getting started.
Thanks, Matt. Go City.
That's Jen Cease. We'll take a break and we'll come back with, we're going to talk with Kyle Gerdeman. He's the head coach of Lindenwood Men's Basketball. He joins us in just a moment. It's a Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Wanted to take the opportunity to catch up with Lindenwood men's basketball coach Kyle Gerdeman. Lindenwood in a really key stretch right now. Their last two wins have each come against regional rivals in Southeast Missouri State, and also SIUE, a really exciting win against them. They're going to go on the road to take on a couple teams that they beat at home earlier this year in Tennessee Martin and Tennessee State this weekend before getting back at against Moorhead State and Southern Indiana next weekend at home. So with that, let's bring Coach Gerdeman on to the program. Coach, thanks so much for taking some time with us today. How are you?
No, doing well. Appreciate you having us on, and you know, always enjoy talking about the program in Lindenwood and how we're growing a little bit. So thanks for having us on.
Yeah, you talk about the growth, and the team is still relatively new as a Division I team, and it seems like steady improvement, not just from your program, but really from programs across the entire athletic department. But you've had getting those wins that I just mentioned over the last couple weeks against SIUE and Southeast Missouri State, those are really big wins for your program.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's been a good year for us. You know, from the non-conference being competitive and winning some games and then getting into the league and you know, getting off to a good start. You know, we put ourselves in a good position. But you know, you talk about the regional wins; those are always important. You know, beating Southeast Missouri State and beating SIUE, who's been at the top of the league for a handful of years, and finally getting a win over them was good. And I think it just shows the growth of our team. And the growth of our program. In general, that we are, you know, we're headed in the right direction.
How much fun is it fun for you kind of building this thing from the ground up?
Yeah, I enjoy it. You know, a lot of people ask that. And, you know, I think obviously when we made the change, we knew the challenges that would be in front of us, but it really is enjoyable. Obviously, it's got its tough times, but that's part of it. But man, I think that if you get a chance to do it and build your own program from the ground up, you know, everything's not built just yet around wins and losses. You understand the process that it takes. It's really been fun, and it's really been fun this year with this group of guys to see the competitiveness grow. They're fired to win, improve over the years, and that's what you enjoy to see, is just the constant process of improvement and just being a more competitive program.
What's the culture like inside the athletic department from, you know, the category of rising tide, lifting all boats? Women's basketball is having a fantastic year doing what they're doing in the conference. We saw hockey earlier this year get a win against the number 9 team in the nation when they knocked off Wisconsin. It just seems like there's a lot of programs, yours included, and everybody's kind of lifting each other up.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because, you know, in the fall we had some teams that had great success. You know, and you talk about our soccer program, you mentioned the hockey team with some big wins, and, you know, Jed and the football program had some big wins that, you know, late in the year, beating SEMO in a big rivalry game when they were nationally ranked. Our women's basketball team is doing fantastic. I think that as a group, you know, the program in general, the entire athletic department, I think, you know, kind of stepped into it with a lot of unknown, but a lot of competitiveness and a lot of coaches eager to prove that we can do this at this level and in the OVC. And I think that's what's been fun to watch, is I don't think anybody's really shied away from it. Everybody's put their head down and worked, and you're starting to see, like you mentioned, those teams have success. And it's really kind of a driving force, you know, that, you know, I think it creates the competitiveness within coaches, you know, that they see a program want to do well. And it gives you belief that you can do it. I think it gives you a challenge to see if you can get your team better. You know, I think all that stuff is fun, and we've got a great bunch of people here working hard.
Earlier in the week, we learned that Jadis Jones had won the OVC Freshman of the Week Award. This is nothing new for him. It's already the eighth time that he has won this award. He's going out there and averaging 11 points and 6 rebounds per game. What an impact you're getting from this guy as a very young player.
Yeah, I think we had a good idea of what we thought we were getting out of him. The fact that he's had this good a year, I don't think that we planned on that. I thought we planned on him being a big part of what we were doing, but the success that he's had is tremendous. But it goes way beyond that because he's an unbelievable person. He's got leadership skills like beyond his years. This isn't your typical, 18, 19-year-old freshman when it comes to some of the things that he does from a locker room standpoint, from a practice standpoint. So, to see his success has just been really enjoyable to watch, and he's enjoyable to be around every day and coach. I mean, and we've got a handful of guys like that, don't get me wrong. But, when you come across a guy like that that just works. I mean, he's played through injuries. He had pneumonia last weekend, wasn't going to sit out. I mean, the character that he brings to your program is just tremendous.
Lindenwood men's basketball coach Kyle Gerdeman continuing to join us on a Graybar Sports Open Line. You look at your roster, and obviously recruiting locals is a really important part of what you need to do, but he's a relatively local guy. You've got tons of local folks on the team. What has it been like for you as you have gone out into the community and been recruiting, and what's the reaction right now to Lindenwood basketball?
I think it's improved every year. I think that there was always a and so be it. I think there's always been a, prove yourself, part of the St. Louis and the region to prove why kids should come to Lindenwood. And we knew that. And I think we've been doing that. We've had tremendous support. We've built great relationships, within the area. And I think we're starting to see that pay off, again, with Jadis Jones, even being from Southeast Missouri, to Clayton Jackson from Cardinal Ritter, getting the Nia Street Trail, who's a St. Louis kid, to come back home. The doors are opening more than they had initially, and it's kind of right on track for what we wanted, because I think we're starting to see more and more support and more people, young student athletes that are, they're interested in what we're building, and they see the success that these guys are having as freshmen and, wanting to come and be a part of that.
You mentioned Aeneas Futrell, also Markeith Browning. Those are the two guys on the roster that lead you in scoring. They each get you about 13 points per game. Can you talk to me? You've got pretty even scoring across the guys that you play a lot, 13, 13, the 11, the 9, the 6. But those two guys specifically, what do they bring you on a night-in, night-out basis?
Well, I think, one, consistency, but also the ability to have a big game. And that's what I think you always have to have. We would love to get, we strive to get 5 guys in double figures, which I think would be a fantastic offense. However, just really hard to do. But I like the balance that we have. But when you talk about those two guys specifically, you're talking, and we mentioned this as a team before, they have the ability to walk out here tomorrow within what we're doing and give you a 20, 25-point game. Markeith did it last Saturday a couple weeks ago, and Nias, I think, had 26 and 24 in our 2 games. We've had Jadis Jones has had 21 in a road game at Southern Indiana. So I think the consistency that you get from them, but then again, the talent level that they bring to you that, they can carry you for a while, and you need that at times. Their shot making ability, their playmaking ability, they take that on their shoulders every game at the top of the other team's scouting report. And I think they've done a fantastic job of leading us in that area.
I know paying attention to your team and your league is a full-time job on its own, but right now in the region, Mizzou and Illinois are each top 25 teams. St. Louis University has been awesome since A-10 play started. We talked about SIUE earlier. They're a great story in the area as well. Is it enjoyable right now to be a college basketball coach in this region where there are so many teams playing at a high level?
Yeah, without a doubt, because I think it's just I think when basketball in the state is good, it's just fun for everybody, and I enjoy to watch it. We played Missouri earlier in the year, and I was just blown away with the depth that they had, and to see them continue to use their depth and how they've kind of turned their program around from a year ago has just been it's been fun to watch. I think what they're doing at St. Louis U, the style of play and winning close games and kind of struggled through the non-conference a little bit, but now find themselves right in the mix of the A-10 it's just fun to watch, and it's, you know, I think it's fun to be a part of as a basketball coach, and just see how good basketball can be. Because like I said, I think when those teams are good, I think it's good for everybody, because it just represents our state so well.
This weekend, you go on the road against Tennessee Martin and Tennessee State. These are two teams that you beat at your place earlier. Nothing tougher in sports than winning on the road in college basketball. So certainly it's a challenge for you this weekend. But is there added confidence when maybe you beat a team at home early in the season when you go see them for a second time and it's at their place?
Yeah, I hope so, because you know, we played well against both of them. You know, we beat Tennessee Martin at the buzzer, actually, and we beat Tennessee State. We were down at halftime, came back and played really well in the second half. So you know, going into it, that you know you can find success against these teams. But then, you know, you flip the coin over and you know they're just dying to beat you. You know, they probably feel like they could have played better. So you understand the challenge that's in front of you when you go on the road. But you know, I think for us, it's just finding consistency in our play, you know, trying to play well every night out, regardless if it's home or on the road, if we beat the team, if we haven't beat the team. You know, we've just got to stay, you know, we've got to stay even keel with it and continue trying to play the rest of the year out.
Lindenwood on the road this weekend. They'll be back the weekend of Thursday, February 13th against Morehead State, and then Saturday, February 15th when they match up against Southern Indiana, both those games at Robert F. Highland Arena in St. Charles. All the detail at lindenwoodlions.com. Coach, thanks so much for your time. Best of luck the rest of the way, and hopefully we can catch up with you again down the line.
Thank you very much. Love to do it anytime.
That's Kyle Gerdeman. He's the head coach at Lindenwood, and I just think everything going on at Lindenwood is a fantastic story as they continue this transition into Division I, still very early in their Division I status, and picking up a win recently against SIUE. That was a great win for them, and we'll see what they can do this weekend. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we will wrap up this edition of the program. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it for one final time tonight on a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley. When we get done here, though, you get a little bit more of me. Tonight it is the Gas House Gang. 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, myself and Kevin Wheeler on tonight's edition of the program. For those of you not familiar with the Gas House Gang, it is a show that we stream live on YouTube and Twitter and Facebook and all our social media channels every weekday afternoon at 12 noon. If you watch it live, you can interact with it by leaving comments and things like that, and then we replay it at night at 8 o'clock or after games get over and things like that. So we do have the Gas House Gang rolling your way this evening. Make sure to be tuned in for it. It's going to get started just after the 8 o'clock news. And also a reminder, tomorrow it is the Countdown to Opening Day show from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock. Myself and Mike Claiborne will have you. The featured guest tomorrow is going to be former Cardinal and now television analyst Brad Thompson. He is going to be with us for much of the show coming up tomorrow, and that's going to be the final Countdown show that we do where we are not originating from Jupiter, Florida. Klaibs has already made his way to Florida. I'm still in St. Louis, but that will not be the case come next week, as on Monday, I'm going to be traveling down to Florida as we get set for our Cardinals spring training to get underway. We've been busy. Lots of interviews. Hopefully you've enjoyed the folks that we've been able to talk to. So lots of interviews and then lots of things going on between all the Cardinals stuff and the Arenado smoke that is starting to puff out once again in terms of a potential trade, talking a little bit about the Billikens and what they did last night in college everything. I mean, we've just had a really, really busy show. Unfortunately, the Blues have kind of been pushed back, and I don't have a lot to say. I don't have a lot to say about the Blues at this moment. They are in a critical, critical, critical stretch. They are playing every game at home between now and Thursday, February 27th. Now, the Four Nations break is inside of that, so it's a six-game homestand, essentially, that's going to be broken up in two. They'll play their final game before the break on February 8th and their final game or their first game after the break on February 22nd. They have not been especially good at home this year for whatever reason, and that's something that they got to get fixed at some point in time, whether it's this year, whether it's future years, if they're not going to be a playoff club this year. At some point in time, you got to figure out how to play at home and be successful at home and make that, you know, it's such a great environment for Blues games, and Blues fans are incredible in the way they support the team. You got to be able to live off that and win most of your home games. So that's something they're still working on. I was frustrated yesterday in an overtime loss to Edmonton because that's a game that you should win. Anytime right now with where this team is at, if you've got an opportunity to win a game, you got to do it. And they were up by a 2-1 score up until about 2.5 minutes to go in the third period. And that's when Edmonton gets the equalizer and then they end up winning in overtime. And you just, like, I get it. Edmonton's good. They got really good players. Connor McDavid scoring their first goal of the night in the second period. Like, that's, this is not, I'm not saying they need to beat Edmonton because Edmonton's a beatable team. I'm saying they need to win that game last night because they had a one goal lead in late in the third period, and you just have to find a way to win that. And I'm not trying to, like, dumb things down here and not, like, break things down and all that. Like, I understand there's more to it than what I'm saying, but there's really not a two, because they're at a point right now with the ground that they need to make up to be a playoff team. They're at a point right now where if there is a win on the table, they have to grab it. They have 53 points right now. Calgary is holding the final playoff spot with 59 points. So they're 6, and also Vancouver at 59 as well. They're 6 points behind Calgary and Vancouver. They're tied with Utah. So they've got some teams that they need to jump over. It's not easy to go make up 6 points. That's not something that they're just going to be able to easily do. So they got to figure this thing out. And from here to the end of the season, if there is a game they're winning in the third period, they have to win that game. They, and I know they get the point and everything that goes along with getting to overtime. Doesn't matter. You got to get, when you've got an opportunity to collect 2 points, you got to go collect 2 points. And they were unable to do that last night, unfortunately. We'll see what they do as this homestand does continue. They play again tomorrow night. They'll match up against the Florida Panthers, so that's certainly not an easy matchup. Florida is good. That'll be a 7 o'clock puck drop inside of the Enterprise Center coming up tomorrow night. All right, thanks to everybody who joined us on the program today. That was a We had a lot of guests. We don't always have a lot of guests on the program, but we had a bunch of them, today. My thanks to Bernie Miklas, also Joe Roderick, Jen Cease, Kyle Gerdeman, all with us over the last couple hours. As always, if you missed any of it, you can always check out the Sports Open Line podcast. That's available at KMOX.com. It's available on the Odyssey app. So just do a search for Sports Open Line. And then coming up next, we do have the Gas House Gang. A lot of Nolan Arenado talk, a lot of Cardinals talk, a lot of discussion about who can take a step forward and whether you prioritize offense or defense, what it's going to look like with Wilson Contreras at first, how good can he be compared to elite first baseman across Major League Baseball. Those are just some of the topics that we're going to get into, myself and Kevin Wheeler. It's the Gas House Gang, and it begins after the 8 o'clock news. I'll be back with you tomorrow night alongside of Mike Claiborne for the Countdown to Opening Day show. Look forward to talking to you then. This has been a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.